February 25th, 1976.
Just received a mysterious card here. It says, Shepard, your influence is beginning to slowly seep its way like a poison gas through the world. As I was in a men's room in Haifa in Israel just 2 weeks ago, and scrawled on the wall over a very important piece of plumbing in the men's room in Haifa with the simple expression, flick lip. Do you have any explanation of this? Well, I'll tell you, kid. No, I have a feeling that, you know, 1,000 years from now, archaeologists are going to be digging in the ruins of various cities around, and they're going to come across all kinds of mysterious slogans that have been written on walls. And one of the most mysterious of all the slogans they're going to come across is the one that says, flick lip. And, of course, there will be, naturally, various schools of philosophy developed, and they will be opposing. One school will think that Flick was a late 20th century theological leader. Another group says, no, it was the misspelling of a common Anglo-Saxon word. Well, Hey, before I go any further, because I'm feeling not necessarily inadequate, but I'm feeling a little shaky. Do you ever go through days, you know, they say that barometric pressure has a great deal to do with the human soul, and the barometric pressure, the movement of the tides. Yeah, they claim the tides has something to do with, you know, I have never had anything to do with a tide in my life, but they say that the tides, the phases of the moon, all these great things, whether they're watering your beer, a lot of stuff can affect you that you don't even know about. Yeah, you know. And they say that if you drink water that has too much of a certain chemical in it, you begin to have delusions that your car is swearing at you. And you don't know why this is happening. You just walk around, all of a sudden you hear voices. Like one time I went into this phone booth here. It's only been a couple of weeks ago, but you know the way time moves in the latter stages of the 20th century, that a couple of weeks ago is like ancient history. It really is. Well, already, Watergate. Watergate has a certain purple fustian quality to it. Like, the Whiskey Rebellion. You know? And you can hardly remember when Nixon was president. Can you actually remember it? Well, you know, you can, yeah. If I say to you, can you remember when Nixon said? You say, yeah. But generally, walking around, you don't. I was walking through a park one day, and I heard this guy yelling and arguing with a whole bunch of people. He was up on a soapbox, see, and he still was arguing about the Vietnam War. Well, you know, passions may run high, friend, but they don't run that long. I mean, not in most people. And the crowd was very bored. But right down about 3 park benches further on top of a soapbox, there was a lady down there who was giving a speech on talking to your plants. You know, that if you talk to your plants, that your plant will respond. And if you really tell your plant that you love it, the plant is liable to really go like, you know, Billy be damned, really grow. And she had about 5,000 people standing around there. And the poor Vietnam guy had about 9 guys. And the only reason they were there is because they couldn't get into the other car that was talking about geranium. It was just too big. Now, I mean, life is like that, friends. You just got to remember that whatever it is that you're involved in right now, you won't even remember it a year from now, clearly. And you may be, you know, you may be fantastically involved with this girl right now. You can't believe that there's anything that's, you know, you discovered what volcanic lava is when you've discovered this girl. Their life has totally changed. Well, I'll guarantee you, 2 years from now, you won't even remember her name. That's a terrible thing. And what's worse, she won't remember yours. So whether you live or not, is lost and will be ultimately lost in history. Oh, yeah, you know, that's one of the most discouraging things about walking around in the middle of museums. You see all this stuff, tapestries, great paintings, and they're all gone. People made this stuff. Hardly anything lasts more than 20 or 30 minutes. And even then, even as it comes out of the machine full-blown, ready to go, it's often already developing rust spots. This is you better give me a little organ music to accompany that somber thought, please. Yes. Now, this very concerned radio station at this time takes a few moments out in the hurly-burly of modern living to contribute a true public service to our time. The public service that points out to you the inevitability that it will all in time pass. Oh, no! Not me, no! No! Not my 53 Mercury! No, no! It'll last forever! Thank you, thank you. That's just a public service there. I mean, you see, I think a true public service is a worrying service. Yeah, I really do. I think that most of us, as we walk around, are beset with tiny devils and imps that live in our head, that convinces us of our total insignificance at times. And then on the other hand, there's another imp that keeps saying, "No, you're the greatest thing that ever lived. Do you realize that when you were created, you were the best thing to come along in this world since bottled beer? You are fantastic." And then there's another imp that says, "Oh, boy, they don't even know you're alive, nobody. They don't give a damn." And those imps battle it out. Nothing lasts. I'm not sure, though. I'm about to make a profound social statement. George, adding my voice to the other 27 billion guys that are making profound social statements at all hours of the day and night, on television, any known medium. You know, I'm going to tell you something awful. My entire life, I cannot remember anybody making one profound social statement that I heard, that I was privileged to hear. I say that with the sarcastic quotes around it, privileged, that ever changed my life. I have never bought anything in my life that changed my life. How many times do you see reviews of movies that says a profound moving experience, unforgettable? And you're going to see it. And 15 minutes later, you're sitting in Lum's, eating a hot dog cooked in beer, and you can't remember the film you saw. Is it because of a failing in you? I am going to submit, no. It is not a failing in you. Nobody can remember. Even the reviewer. It's just a nice thing to write. It doesn't have a damn thing to do with life. Very little writing does. I mean, life just goes on. You stand there in the shoe repair place. Watch that guy fixing the shoes of the world. That machine is roaring. and he's grinding away the rough edges of the new rubber heel, pounding those nails into the soles of existence. Down the street, somebody's popping the top off a can of Diet Tab. Overhead, a 707 is slowly working its way towards Las Vegas. Nothing changes. A little organ music, please. Just a little. Do you really think that if the right candidate is nominated and elected, naturally your candidate, that your life will actually change? This is not to denote cynicism with the political system. It denotes a view of life. It has nothing to do with politics. But one of the great dreams of all mankind is that if the right pharaoh is in office, the pyramid will turn to pure gold. Hey, you liked that imagery, didn't you? Not bad. You know, what the hell. I mean, after all, it's only radio. Now, if Philip Roth said that, they would have that engraved on medallions. Or Norman Mailer, right, huh? Don't hold your breath for Norman Mailer to come up with something like that. Okay, all right. Now, wait a minute. Now, just a minute. Let's get this straight. There are things. You like that, huh? Now, I'm going to use the next cut, the other one, the spring one later. Now, just hold it there, because I have good news to report to you tonight, my fellow sufferers. Good news. Would you please bring on my romantic good news music, please? Oh, that's great. Oh. Wouldn't you once like to wear one of those gauze pajamas and go floating through the woods blowing on a pair of flutes? And, you know, and you got these fur pants and cloven hoops. The winter will come to an end and there will be a spring. And when the spring comes, once again, that human madness will take place in your head. That compost heap of all kinds of conflicting emotions. You'll say, well, I'm not going to blow it this summer. I am going all the way. I'm going all the way. Like they do in the Ballantine beer commercial. You only live once. Or is that the Schlitz commercial? Doesn't matter. Hold it there. At ease. Reset that. You see, that was a moment of hope. And you don't get many of these moments. What I'm trying to say here, it doesn't matter one way or the other. Life itself. Time now for a profound statement. This will appear on the Blue Book exam regarding this program later on in the year. So I would suggest you make a note of this. Friends, regardless of who's in or who's out, what political party is in or who's out, life itself is infinitely worth living. You agree with that? Have you ever noticed that people who are really angry and into politics rarely smile? Because they are missing the point of life. You just never see Bella Abzug with a grin on her face. Can't imagine it, can you? Speaking of fantasies, this is WOR, New York. And we will be back immediately following this barrage of commercials. Hope springs eternal. Okay. All right. Now, it's time to really get into it here. Now, I don't know how to quite get into this. Difficult thing to get into because, you know, there are certain subjects that are, when you touch on them, when you're just sitting in, you know, in a crowd and you're talking, you're at a cocktail party, you're kind of afraid to bring up certain things because you don't want to be out of, let's say, the mode. In other words, what I'm saying here is that ideas even have a fashion to them, like clothes. And if you have the wrong idea, you can be as out as, say, if you come in wearing a pair of knickers. You know, hey, speaking of ideas, you know, I saw a sad thing the other day. I'm walking along the street, and if you really keep your eyes open, you really look at the street when you walk around. I mean, really look at the street. You know, a lot of people don't really look at anything in their lives. I mean, really look. For example, how often when you walk down the street do you really look at a garbage can and really look to see what's in there? Well, I'm telling you, most people just walk right on by. And I want to say that if you look in garbage cans, and I don't mean go and rummage through them, I mean, just keep your eyes open, just look, and see stuff that people throw out, and just stuff that's sitting around on the street. You will see far more about the condition of our life than you will by reading the editorial pages. Now, for example, we're probably the only country in the world where you can walk down streets and find television sets thrown out. Now that's fantastic. I mean, have you ever seen this? You walk down and one day a friend of mine picked up one of these TV sets. It was sitting on a street, you know, sitting out there by the rest of all the rubbish and stuff, and he took it home. He figured it wouldn't work, so he took it home, plugged it in, it worked fine. And it turns out that the reason the guy threw it out was because it was not a color set. Friends, we are living in a country that makes Imperial Rome look like Atlantic City. I mean, that's a fantastic concept. And so you walk down the street and you see a TV set there. Well, that says something about our life. And you won't find the comment that I'm trying to make about our life in the editorial pages of the Times. It has nothing to do with affluence. Yet, peripherally, it does. Now, like the other day, I see in a garbage can, just walking along the street, I couldn't believe at first what I was seeing. I thought I saw a 38. Now, a 38, I'm talking about, you know, a Roscoe. I figured I'd seen this 38, see? And I said, oh, great Scott, somebody's getting rid of the evidence. And there was a 38. It was in a holster, and it turns out that it was one of these things. Do you remember when girls were wearing holsters a couple of years ago with these fake bullets? And they had a fake gun, and they were selling for as high as, oh, some of them, I think, sold for as high as $150. Yeah, they really did. It's crazy. Now, I can imagine how many girls have got in their closets hidden away. I mean, so it doesn't embarrass them when they see it. Because, you know, you can really be embarrassed by looking at something that you once bought in a total fit of enthusiasm. And you never did anything about it after that. I wonder how many girls have got hidden in closets holsters with fake bullets. You know, they had to have it. Oh, man, I got to get this. I mean, and you rush out. That was a fashion that lasted maybe 8 or 9 minutes at the outside. And yet, there was a lot of people bought them, these things. Well, I have a friend. I mean, I never want to bring it up because it's so embarrassing. But I had a friend during the very top peak of the Beatlemania. Do you remember the Beatlemania? Well, at the very peak of the Beatle insanity, he, for some reason known only to himself at that time, decided, you know, he had to have this. He had to get himself an electric guitar. And has Paul McCartney's face on it. So, well, I want to tell you, electric guitars, including speakers, including the amplifiers and the mixers and stuff, they don't come cheap. Well, he bought a Paul McCartney electric guitar, complete with the faders, reverb, you know, the voice thing, which you put it on your throat, and make it sound like you're singing through a tin can. You've seen those things. He's got this whole works. He played it once for about 5 minutes, rapidly realized that he couldn't play it. It wasn't fun. And it's been at the bottom of his closet ever since. So you can see about our time by looking at what people throw away or don't throw away often. Well, the other day, and this is where we get into the whole crux. Now I'm going to tell you a story. I drive into this shopping center the other day, and they have a bookstore in the shopping center. Now, I don't know whether this is a significant trend or not. I am inclined to think it is. And there in the shopping center, and I've never seen anybody report this, there's this bookstore. And, you know, the usual bookstore, they've got all kinds of racks of paperbacks and stuff. But it was the first time I've ever seen a bookstore that had a poster on the front window about a shipment of books that have just arrived. You know, you would expect it to be something like, at last, a new shipment of Jaws has arrived, something like that, you know? No way. There was a poster that said, they have arrived, a new shipment, again, while they last, a shipment of Nancy Drew mysteries. And the Hardy Boys. I've been looking at that, I can't believe it. Well, now, wait, do you hear what I'm saying? I am saying that somebody is buying so many Nancy Drew mysteries these days that they have to put a poster out in front of the bookstore that says they have just gotten another hot shipment in. You know what the Nancy Drew mysteries are? You don't? Well, the Nancy Drew mysteries are girls' books written about a girl named Nancy Drew. Who went around and solved mysteries. For example, one of her great smash mysteries that she solved was the mystery of the stone wall. Nancy Drew and the mystery of the stone wall. Well, now, that wasn't a drink. you know what a stone wall is? Any of you know what a drink the stone wall is? If you've never tasted a stone wall, you've missed one of the great drinks of all time. And you know why it was named the Stonewall? Now, I'm sure I'm off the subject here, but not really. Because nothing is off the subject in life, buddy. A Stonewall. Okay, who in our history was named Stonewall? Right, Stonewall Jackson. Remember, center fielder, played for the A's? That was Reggie. But Stonewall Jackson. Okay, now, Stonewall Jackson lived during what period in time? He was a general, right? And what war was he a general in? Civil War. Okay. What did they drink in the Civil War? What did Grant drink? Whiskey. Now, wait a minute. That's not enough. There's all kinds of whiskeys, buddy. What kind of whiskey did he drink? Bourbon. That's right. All right, and in fact, they even often advertised the brand that Grant drank. He drank a specific brand, and he used to order it in 10-barrel lots. Now, that's a serious man. He'd order 10 barrels. Please send 10 barrels to Chickamauga. I expect to be there for a while. But, Stonewall Jackson drank bourbon, but he drank it in a special way. And I'm going to suggest a fantastic drink. Stonewall bourbon used to take, well, this is what's called a Stonewall. Take a tall glass, you know, like the kind you use for, Bloody Mary, a tall glass. Put a good jigger of bourbon in the bottom of it. Use a good bourbon. In fact, a person of your taste would never use anything but a good bourbon, correct? Right. Old granddad, maybe, something like that. Jack Daniels, maybe. which is really not a bourbon. It's a sour mash Tennessee whiskey, but that's different, you know, slightly. A classical bourbon would be Old Granddad Jim Beam. Right, there's a classic. Jim Beam, Green Label. Now, there's an elegant one. Now, Maker's Mark is another one. George Dickel, right? So, you put a good-sized dollop of bourbon in the bottom of this cold glass. Make it cold, right, for starters. And you put this bourbon in the bottom. And then you fill up the glass with ice-cold apple cider. Friends, you have a drink that will make any party totally convivial. I mean, in fact, it's the kind of drink that your Aunt Min, I mean, if you say, would you like some apple cider, Aunt Min? And she tries that apple cider, she's going to love it. Within 20 minutes, her blue hair will have turned a light green, and she will start singing old barracks ballads that she learned as a girl. that's a Stonewall. Stonewall used to drink apple cider. Stonewall Jackson drank apple cider, and that goes back to the Civil War. You know that many drinks go back to various wars. Did you know that? That wars developed very interesting drinks. For example, have you ever heard of a French 75? You never heard of this drink? Well, I don't want to burden you with the dull story of a French 75, but the French 75 is a drink that dates back to and was invented by a specific man in World War I. The French 75 was a cannon of the period, and this cannon was known for one thing. It was a 75 millimeter cannon, but it was known for one thing. This cannon was quiet. It didn't make a lot of noise. It was what they call a flat rifle cannon. Bang! You know, a sharp, ringing shot like that. But it packed a fantastic wallop, which exactly describes the drink. Now, if you'd like to try a French 75 that was invented, I would warn you, by the way, I must raise my hand right now and say that if you're not really serious, stay clear of this drink. This drink is lethal and is truly dangerous due to nobody quite knows what, but they say it's some of the chemical composition in it. But what it is, it's a delicious drink, really. It's a spectacularly good drink. But it was devised by an American ace, a famous flyer in World War I, who is sort of a legendary character. In fact, he is a legend. His name was Raoul Luftberry. He invented the famous Luftberry turn. And Luftberry was an elegant man. He was an American ace. He was almost like the kind of pictures you see of the ace, you know, with a white scarf and all. And the Americans were a different breed of flyer than the Britishers and the Frenchmen. First of all, wine was not an American drink at the time, World War I. They were hard whiskey drinkers. And yet they had all this wine. They were in France. And the French were continually giving them wine. But it just didn't have the kind of thing. If you're used to bourbon, wine is kind of a child's drink, right? So one day, Raoul Luftberry is in the mess, and they have champagne, and he devised a drink just like that, which was destined to become world famous and is now served in the most elegant bars in the world. He took a tall glass, like a drinking glass, not a wine glass, but a tall glass. And he put in the glass about three, and I might say good ones, about three dollops of cognac. You know what is it, cognac? Brandy, right? Very strong stuff. He then filled the rest of the glass up with ice-cold champagne. Wow. Now, that drink, while it sounds strange to you, you know, mixing something with champagne, is one of the world's most delightful tasting drinks. I can only assure you, though, of one thing. This is probably the best named drink in the history of drinkology. One French 75, and your head goes off like a spent shell casing. I'm serious. I have seen redwood trees felled by one French 75. It's an elegant drink. Now, I don't know how I got into the mythology of drinks. Now, what was the famous drink that came out of World War II? Come on. Well, this is going to surprise you. This is really going to surprise you when I tell you what drink came out of World War II that is very famous and is drunk today. The Bloody Mary. And the Bloody Mary was a World War II drink. Now, who was the Bloody Mary to whom it referred? Correct. And why did they invent that drink? Well, first of all, historically, apparently, the whiskey that was available in World War II was little better than Prestone. I mean, it was bad stuff. So you had to mix it with something to make it taste good. So mixing it with tomato juice made it palatable. It also, and now, all right, one more thing. You all know how to make a Bloody Mary, right? Vodka, tomato juice, some Worcestershire sauce.